Final hour for the week. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, the iHeartRadio app, TSN1050.ca, podcast. You can find us everywhere, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
You can find us everywhere. Dave Festrick of the Stars in here. And Pierre LeBrun got, I would say, a pretty good assignment. Pierre's out there in Calgary, and so is Noodles. Noodles is out there for the game tonight, and he's doing the alumni thing. He's a Flames alumni.
Right.
And so he'll be in Calgary tonight for the game, and then he's driving down the highway, and he's going to Edmonton, and he's an Edmonton native. So he'll be there, I guess, representing the city of Edmonton as well on Sunday night for Game 3. And then we're off on Monday. We'll all be back on Tuesday. So O had a pre-scheduled personal day set up for today anyway. Who knows what he's up to, but he's up to something, I'm sure. And yeah, we'll find out what Pierre's up to out in Alberta tonight. Now, the Battle of Alberta Game 2 tonight.
Exactly. Now, you never got too specific, and I don't know, I don't want to out you here, but about your round at the famed St. George's, the soon-to-be home of the first Canadian Open in a few years. How did it go for you?
Pretty well. It wasn't like I was shooting the lights out by any means. Shot an 84, par 70. But I'm more than happy with that. Yeah, exactly. I had not played it before, but they're growing the rough out, which they will cut down appropriately, you know, come the tournament. But it's going to be thick rough, like as you would expect for any pro tournament, let alone an Open Championship. But the course was in immaculate shape. Like they've got it going, man. They've got the fairway going, the greens were really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be in even better shape in a few weeks. And I was chatting with John, their GM. I was out there playing with him. I had Lawrence Applebaum with me, the president and CEO of Golf Canada. So Lawrence was there. There's a lot of work going on out there, as you would expect, right? There's going to be grandstands. And there's going to be a lot of people rolling through. And I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere. Like Darcy Tucker and I were there, the guests of these two guys, and it was spectacular to get out there. The weather was beautiful. The course was in a great shape, and we had a great time. And I'm looking forward to getting the show out there. Like I said earlier, we're going to be out there, and we're hoping to be there all week. And we're going to be right there on the 16th tee, which is a beautiful little par 3. And
signature hole.
Absolutely. It's going to be I think it's going to be a lot of fun because I really do believe that golf – the numbers alone would suggest it has exploded in popularity in terms of the amount of people playing.
Tell me about it.
I think the viewing is through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, COVID has done a lot of damage to a lot of different businesses. Golf is not one of them. It has benefited golf greatly. And I think the fact that the Canadian Open has been on hiatus for a couple of years, I expect it to come back with a bang. And, you know, St. George's is consistently ranked one of the three or four best courses in the country.
Yeah.
And it's hosting, and I think it'll be a great host. I expect it to be a great week, and I think a lot of people are going to get out, and it should be a lot of fun.
Well, they're doing the rock concerts down the road at the high school, right? Richfield Collegiate sports fields being transformed into a concert venue. What, they got Maroon 5 coming in. They got Flo Rida.
That's right.
Sounds like it'll be a fun week.
Yep, and that's what we're looking for. We're looking for parties. We're looking for you know, mingling. You're looking to get together with people, right? And having a good time again, because as we established at the top of the show, the long weekend's here, and it feels like a long weekend again. Like, it feels like people are getting away and people are going to have plans, and I mean, that I think is something worthy of celebration. I don't want to get too sappy here.
No.
But it's been a tough 2 years, to put it lightly.
And, for sure.
You know, I think people are enjoying themselves. And obviously, we've got a lot of sports action going on here. The PGA Championship continues, and we're tracking to see if Tiger Woods will make the cut. I don't see it happening. John Daly, naturally, not going to make the cut. But I thought Daly held up okay. Like, he's out there right now. He's 6 over on the day. He's 8 over for the tournament.
Not terrible.
But that's not awful.
Like, not too far off.
Like, Cameron Champ is 10 over. Mackenzie Hughes, our boy, is 10 over and still out there on the course.
Yeah.
Patrick Cantlay finished 11 over for the tournament. Cantlay, that's one of the 5 or 6 best players in the world. John Daly's going to beat him more than likely. And I don't know how Daly does it, but he always finds a Hooters, like, wherever he happens to be. Do they set up, like, is there like a road John Daly's Hooters that's like fully staffed, and wherever he happens to be, it just kind of shows up and tracks him, or what?
It must be it, right? Like that's how it works. It's always a Hooters with a massive parking lot where he can park his RV and you know, sell his wares to his adoring public.
Yes, always. Like he finds casinos,
Oh yeah.
which I guess he was at yesterday. You know, he's not prepping for round two. He knows he's going to miss the cut. He's not even trying to make the cut. You know, he just wants to probably go home or go to Hooters or go back to the casino. But he found a casino somehow, and he found a Hooters.
Well, he's got his Hooters endorsement deal. This is a guy that
Yeah.
he's not making a lot of prize money these days, Hayes. He's got to find other sources of
That's
income.
right. That's right.
So all these kinds of side deals where he's just hanging out, shaking hands, kissing babies. That's John Daly Incorporated these days.
Nothing wrong with that. And I guess his son, who we don't call Little John anymore, right?
No,
Like, you won't
he's a
allow
big
for
boy.
that. He is, and he signed one of those collegiate deals where he's making money. Like
Yeah.
Hooters is sponsoring him, and he's playing college golf somewhere.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the second installment of the Battle of Alberta goes down tonight in Calgary, and the first one I would say was memorable. It was certainly a game I don't think anyone's going to forget. And Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider, is out there. This is a great, great gig, I would think, to be out there covering this series, and he joins us now. What's the buzz like? What are we, 8, 9 hours away from puck drop, Pierre? What's going on out
Oh,
there?
I'm not kidding you. I'm going for a nap after our radio hit because we might be covering hockey until 2 a.m. or whatever tonight. But and the re by the way, I heard you guys earlier in the show talking about this. The reason, as far as I can tell, ascertain, is that ESPN has the PGA Championship coverage going to 8 Eastern, and then has a doubleheader.
Yeah.
So this is a USTD issue, as far as we have the two late starts in Carolina and here in Calgary tonight. It sticks for the players. We asked the players this morning after the skates. I can't even call them morning skates. I think the Oilers were off the ice at like 1 local time here today.
Yeah.
But it changes the routine a bit, right? I mean, Matthew Tkachuk just thought he'd take a longer nap himself. But, you know, hopefully no more. I mean, it's actually 8:50 local time for the puck drop. 10:50 your time.
Right.
So hopefully in overtime, I would say. But I tell you what, the buzz around this series is unbelievable. And, you know, I got to thinking today as I was watching the skates that I feel for Leafs fans and Habs fans a year ago who, you know, similarly to here, where this is the first Battle of Alberta in 31 years, and Habs and Leafs for their first series since 79. But the fans didn't really partake last year for the Leafs and Habs. You know, the rinks were mostly empty. The Habs got a sprinkling of fans at the end, I guess, but and couldn't even get into bars. The restrictions were still up in bars. So Battle Alberta is for real. I mean, it is like everyone is walking around town here in Calgary with their Flames jersey on. There's lots of Edmonton fans who have made the trip, or transplants who live here with their Oilers jerseys on. Like, everyone's wearing a sweater, either one. And it's a fantastic atmosphere, right? You know, I said this on Ryan Rashog's podcast this week, but this was one of my working life bucket list items before the end of my career, was to cover a Battle of Alberta playoff series. So I'm really happy to be here.
So game one, Pierre, it was an absolute walkover in a lot of eyes, as much as, you know, 9-6 Calgary, and I know Edmonton tied at 6-6, but they find themselves down 5-1. You're not going to win many games when you do that. Do you feel like, you know, Edmonton has a counterpunch in them, given the way, you know, Calgary dominated the shot clock and the scoring chances and everything on down the line in game one?
You know, Dave, I mean, I think they do. They've responded. I know L.A. is not Calgary, but they, you know, they lost game one to L.A., and then you felt like the whole, you know, you could feel the tension in and around the organization about, you know, because the Oilers like the Leafs fighting their own playoff demons, and they had an amazing game too. I was there in the rink in Edmonton, and I expect that kind of rebound tonight. It may not be enough to win, but I think they do. Under Jay Woodcroft, they have rebounded really well off losses ever since he took over February 10th, and I expect to see that tonight. And I gotta tell you, and I know you guys are watching on TV, and as I have been, all you know, as I have been as well, but I have to tell you, it really does take your breath away sometimes to see what Connor McDavid does in you know, when you're watching him live in the rink, because you can see the whole ice and the way that he gets from point A to point B after all these years of watching this guy's career. It still takes your breath away at times. I mean, there are a couple plays he made in game one I'm just telling you, no one else in the league can do. Like, it's just, like, unbelievable. And you know, it's a preoccupation for the Flames. I mean, Daryl Sutter said it, for letting Connor McDavid get 4 points every night. We're going to be congratulating him on going to the Western Conference Final, not the other way around. So, you know, Calgary, I think, is a deeper team. I think the Flames are going to win this series. But you asked me the question, Dave. Number 97 has the ability single-handedly to provide some moments here for the Oilers in this series big time. Like I think he could steal a game or two on his own.
See, where that would scare me is if it got to a game seven, right? Like if it,
right.
Because he just had 4 goals and it did, or 4 points, and it didn't matter. They lost.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately, as important as he is and how great as he is, if Edmonton's going to defend the way they did, Mike Smith or Koskinen are going to play the way they did, then it doesn't matter what he's going to do. But if you get to a game seven, that's where, you know, McDavid could have a Gretzky in 93 type of night, you know, where he has a 5-point night. And then right. You're really putting yourself in a position there. I have to believe Sutter is thinking like that. Do not allow that guy to have an opportunity to have the game of his life in a game seven. So almost, right. It's almost mandatory if you're Calgary. You got to win this thing in six or less. And I think if they win tonight, that's what's going to happen.
I think that's a great point. And, you know, and I have to say that, you know, the other side of, again, watching these teams live in person and getting that extra layer that you don't get from watching on TV, Lindholm, Tkachuk, and Goudreau, it is, and watching them without the puck, those guys know where each other are all the time. I mean, there's a lot of great lines in the game, guys, and I think, you know, we're obviously spoiled in Toronto to watch Matthews and Marner all year and what they did. I don't know how many lines where all three have equal, you know, contribution to the excellence of the line, if you know what I mean. Like, this isn't just we have a great pairing and who should we put with these two great players. These three guys, I mean, it looked like they were looking up and taking their time to see where they wanted the puck next on some of their shifts in game one. Now, I know the Oilers are going to want to play them a lot tighter tonight, but it actually is mesmerizing to watch that top line for the Calgary Flames. It is just amazing chemistry between those three.
Yep, there's a reason that they kept getting their tires pumped all year, right, Pierre? Like, there's a reason Lindholm is a guy that's up for a Selke. There's a reason Goudreau is going to get paid a fortune, and why Tkachuk is right in the middle of everything. And I think it's Tkachuk. Like, as much as I totally agree with you, you need all three ingredients to make the soup or the meal or whatever you want to call it. Tkachuk, to me, fact that he can score 40 and the fact that he can chirp the way he chirps and agitate the way he agitates, and he will hit, he will fight. Right? Like, I don't think he's looking to fight Kane. I don't think that's going to happen. Much like I don't think Kane is looking to fight Lucic.
Right. We'll
but he's, like, Tkachuk is right in the middle of everything. And, like, that, I find him, as great as McDavid is, and as captivating as McDavid is, there's an element of what Tkachuk brings to the table that is equally as entertaining because he's right in the middle of everything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Flames fans just adore the guy. And
as they should,
the thing that
yeah.
And the thing that I really respect about his game is that, you know, listen, there are other guys around the league that like to agitate and as well, but this guy backs everything up. I mean, he's there. Like, yeah, he'll get under your skin and he'll say things and he'll agitate. He's also going to dump a hat trick on you while he's at it.
Right.
And it is amazing. I mean, Lindholm is probably the player that gets talked about the least, at least outside of this market here in Calgary. They appreciate him here, that's for sure. I actually wrote about him for today in The Athletic, and you know, that trade is going to end up being, I think, the legacy trade for, you know, each GM tries to have, the trade that they're remembered for in a positive sense. And you know, Lindholm and Hanifin are still here from that trade with Carolina 4 years ago that sent Dougie Hamilton the rights to Adam Fox and Michael Ferland the other way. And it's actually a trade that for quite a while helped both teams. I mean, Dougie Hamilton had three tremendous seasons in Carolina. They took a swing at Adam Fox, which, of course, can you imagine if Carolina had been able to sign him? Oh,
right.
My goodness. But Calgary knew they couldn't sign him. And that deal just keeps looking great for Brad Treliving. I mean, Lindholm is a Selke Trophy guy centering an incredible top line, and he's making $4.85 million a year for another 2 years after this year.
So, Pierre, we had Pooley on earlier. We were doing a little bit of the forensic analysis of another dead Leaf season. And Pooley's theory is, you know, as much as all the talk, you know, from Shanahan was, we're not going to make change for the sake of making change. And there was a lot of self-congratulation about all the progress the Leafs had made in that, you know, season-ending press conference. Pooley believes they're going to make some kind of significant move, not just nibbling around the edges and, you know, filling in the holes. They're obviously going to have to fill in with their free agents and the goaltending situation. But he thinks there's something bigger that's going to have to happen here. How do you see the Maple Leafs offseason unfolding?
Yeah, I heard that segment. I heard Noodle this week. I've been trying to catch as much of you guys as I can here from Calgary. Hayes, I loved your analysis right off the bat Monday, which I know you've worked on all weekend.
Yes, thank you.
yes.
Sadly, no, I did. Reluctantly true.
It was some pretty smart stuff. And I've heard everyone out. It's funny, usually you have me on the next day every year, so this is weird that I waited 6 days. But there's a number of things. Number one, I thought this would be interesting to you guys and to our listeners, but I knowing that I was on today, I texted a front office executive from a rival team, from another team, and I said, you know, what would you do if you were the Leafs? And, you know, I've had some interesting answers over the years with that question, especially when, you know, it's anonymous and they can be really honest. You know what this guy said? Stay the course. I would change almost nothing. They are a good team. He said, Kyle Dubas has done a lot of good work there. The worst thing they could do is change for the sake of change, was this guy's answer. And, you know, I don't know that I totally agree with him, to be honest, but it's just, I just wanted to share that with you guys because that's a guy that works for another team that works to try and compete with the Leafs. And he thinks that's what he thinks of them. So, you know, the hard part for me is that I think he answered that in a vacuum and without the nuance of this now being 18 years without a playoff series win and certainly six straight years under in the Matthews era. And that's the hard part. Like, I didn't like that people were trying to sugarcoat the loss almost as soon as Game 7 ended. Well, at least this time, you know, they played hard. And, you know, they took the cup champs to 7. I could live with that. Only if they hadn't lost to Montreal and Columbus before it.
Right. Exactly.
Unfortunately, you don't get the benefit of the doubt after that. You have to win. At some point, if you're a championship contender, which I think the Leafs on paper are, you got to win. There's no participation ribbons here for going 7 with the cup champs. You need to start winning when it matters. And I'm not trying to, again, I've just shared with you what another team executive thought of the Leafs. He thinks they're a good team and he would barely change them, but I'm just saying I'm not overly comfortable with what seems to be a more or less a fair analysis in the wake of another first round loss. I it's still a loss. It is what it is.
I see it the exact same way. If you look at it in through a vacuum or in a vacuum, and I said 115 points, 60 goal scorer, might win the Hart, you know, all-stars up and down the lineup, and took the two-time cup champs, and I would argue maybe still the best team in the league to 7, that on its own, you'd say, I can reason with that still being a very good team. And they are a very good team. The problem is it you can't analyze it that way, and I don't think you can build moving forward that way because those same guys that couldn't get it done regardless of the opponent this time couldn't get it done against inferior opponents and have had so many opportunities and so many kicks at the can. And within that 7-game series, I also think it's misleading just to look at it from a big picture standpoint. We talked about killer instinct a lot today. Wasn't there in game 2? Wasn't there in game 4? Right? Like, wasn't close.
And the bottom line is you starting the third period in game 6 in Tampa up a goal.
And that's your opportunity to prove, you know what, we're not losing. Like, we are not losing this game because when it flipped 2 nights later, Tampa came out of the second intermission and said, we're not losing. And they did not lose. And so, I think they do have a very good team. I think you keep 90% of that, but that 10% turnover, I think it should be a message-sending turnover. I think it has to be something that truly changes the identity of your team to an extent. Where it doesn't get rid of the positives, but it does send a message that this isn't good enough because it hasn't been for a long time.
I agree. And there's two things I would add to that. I completely agree. One is that I think some of it is semantics when people on your air and throughout Leaf Nation have been arguing about, you know, what kind of change is needed. The cap itself is, even if the Leafs had gone on to win the Cup this year, the Leafs were going to be forced into change. So I think we have to stop getting so hung up on, you know, should they make change or not. They will, because they have no choice. There was going to be change no matter what happened. So right. That is coming. I mean, you know, whether you re-sign Jack Campbell, which means you have to get rid of Mrazek or make other moves, or you lose Jack Campbell and you have to replace him, no matter what, change is coming. So that's number one. Number two is, for the first time really since this run started, you're actually now facing some kind of a artificial deadline of 12 months from now where you need to know from Austin Matthews what his plans are. You know, it may very well be that he wants to sign for the rest of his career to be a Leaf. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But you do have to have that conversation literally in 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
1 year away from the end of his deal. And that conversation alone, it changes everything either way. So this is, you know, if you want to call it, you know, running the team back or whatever way you want to describe it, regardless of how many tweaks are made or not, this is the last season that you're going into before you're having a conversation that you're not 100% you know the answer to. Right?
Yep, exactly.
So, from that perspective, you know, this is it. They have to, I guess my point would be whether they finally win a playoff series might also have an impact to the answer you get to that conversation, by the way.
Mm-hmm. You would think, Pierre. You would think. So just swirling around the league a little, Pierre, Rick Bowness stepping down as the head coach of the Dallas Stars after a 3-year run. What do you make of his prospects on the coaching market?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It was an important, you know, important for him in his statement, and I did some reporting too, but, like, you know, there are people that thought maybe he would retire, but it's important that he's come out and said no, that while he is leaving Dallas, he still wants to coach. So that's number one. You know, it's interesting. We know Barry Trotz, you know, met with the Jets this week. And I wonder about Rick Bowness as another option there, given his history in Winnipeg, for example. But it's also becoming a very interesting coaching market suddenly over the last couple of weeks. I mean, you got Pete DeBoer out there, obviously Barry Trotz. You know, I think Claude Julien, who's coaching Canada right now, would like another run at it. You know, we have not heard from Joel Quenneville at all since he resigned, right? Mm-hmm. Earlier this season. I suspect he probably does want to come back, and that would require meeting with Gary Bettman and dealing with that. But, you know, don't forget him is what I'm saying. It's an interesting time, and there's some plum assignments out there. Like, I tell you what, whoever goes into Dallas to replace Rick Bowness, right off the bat, you're coming in with a young star goalie who just had one of the greatest series in years. You got Jason Robertson, Rupe Hines. There's a lot to build from with that roster. So that's a pretty good assignment. Tons of guys, I think, will want the gig in Vegas. So it's an interesting time, I think, to be a free agent coach. And also what's going to fascinate me, guys, is that I think the pandemic has slowed down the growth of coaches' salaries a bit. We're not seeing, like, every year was jumping. And I think owners have kind of reined that in a bit. So I'm going to be curious, too, what kind of money some of these guys are going to get in their next gig.
Well, we still got a few rounds to go before we get probably to the heavy lifting, although you can hire coaches whenever you want. So there's a chance that could happen, you know, between now and the next time we have you on, Pierre. But enjoy yourself out there, buddy. It's going to be a wild one tonight, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Sounds great. Have a great long weekend, guys.
You got it. You too. There's Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider, live from Calgary, Alberta, ahead of the Battle of Alberta tonight. 2.0, Game 2 tonight. And I assume Brady Tkachuk will be back in attendance. It's Friday night. Why wouldn't you have a great time?
Oh, yeah.
Right? He'll be having himself a time, I would think, out there. So
he's the life of the party.
He really is. He's become effectively the Flames mascot.
Exactly.
Like he's Harvey the Hound. Take a lap, dude. Brady Tkachuk is in town So, yeah, we'll see what comes of it tonight. Bobby Marks will join us, ESPN NBA front office insider. The Celtics found a way to even it up. In fact, they blew their doors off Miami last night.
Killed them.
Feels like almost a must-win for Dallas tonight, right? It's you got to counter now. I think Luka's going to go off, and I expect that. I expect Luka to have himself a night. We'll get into that more with Bobby Marks. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, the Jays are back in action tonight. Cincinnati Reds in town. A rare Joey Votto appearance in his hometown. And Jays a couple games above 500. We all know what the bats are all about right now. It's not a good scene. You know, the bats are not alive. There's not a lot of pop. But they're still, you know, fighting for wild card spots. The Yankees are 8 games up on them, but there's a lot of baseball left to be played. And the run differential says that the Jays are in a position where maybe they're almost lucky to be above 500. Mm-hmm. They've been getting some great outings from guys like Gausman. Kikuchi's turned his season around. Barrios has been somewhat up and down, but Manoa's been good. Their bullpen's been pretty strong. You know, the arms have kind of stabilized, and that's what's needed. You need some ebbs and flows, and if you really want to pop at some point, you need the bats, the arms, and defense. You need all three if you want to win a World Series. But there's a lot of runway here to figure that out.
Yeah, and maybe a team like the Reds who've given up more runs than anybody in baseball. It's a nice little recipe to get things back on the rails in this little 3-game series against Joey Votto and his band of misfits and ragtag ballplayers from Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's a tank job, effectively, out in Cincinnati. And for the Celtics, really, it was just about getting Marcus Smart back. You wouldn't know he was injured, man. You wouldn't know he was banged up the way he performed last night. His stat line was off the charts and Defensive Player of the Year. And he imposed his will in that game last night. And Horford was returning. And that was a big win. Big win for Boston. And the tables really turned. And now they go home with a split. And they have to be feeling good. And to chat about that, we're joined now by ESPN NBA front office insider Bobby Marks. This Celtics team, Bobby, all year has been, well, they started poorly, but ever since that start, they took off. And defensively, the best metrics in the NBA. Marcus Smart, the Defensive Player of the Year. Tatum gets a ton of love. Brown gets a ton of love. Williams gets a ton of love. But is Smart the X factor? Like, is he the guy that stirs the drink for the Celtics, in your opinion?
Well, yeah. I mean, especially because he can give you a little bit, you know, certainly the Defensive Player of the Year. And then, you know, when he gives you, you know, on offense, it's a bonus year. But I would say he's probably the heart, you know, heart of the team. And then when you can get, you know, what, 30-plus points with Williams and Peyton Pritchard off your – you know, off your bench, you know, that's tough because even on nights that, you know, Tatum or Brown are maybe not shooting the ball well, they've got a lot of different ways that they can beat you.
So, Bobby, obviously Miami in a little bit of a crisis mode right now, largely because they're without a couple of really important players. One that the Raptor fans know well in Kyle Lowry. What has he missed 4 straight playoff game series, only played in 5 of their 13 playoff games. I know he's traveling with the team to Boston. What are you hearing about the prospects of Lowry actually getting back into this series, and how important is it that he do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's listed as questionable, so we'll see going into game 3. I thought Kyle on the court in that Philadelphia series, I think, hurt Miami towards the back end just because he wasn't full strength, and I think, you know, he was exposed, certainly defensively. I didn't think he had much to give on offense. So I just think it's a matter of kind of where his body is. I know you say, hey, it's Kyle Lowry, and even if he's 60%, it's better than nothing. But I don't believe that because I think if he isn't 85% right, I think he's probably more, you know, more of a detriment to the Heat than a than an advantage, especially how Boston plays. So we'll wait and see. The hard part is that these games are, you know, basically every other night here. And I know he's been out since, game 5, I want to say, in the Philadelphia series here. But we'll see what his availability is. But I think you're going to need Kyle Lowry to beat this Boston team. I mean, this is a good team. I mean, it's really a lot of different ways that they can beat you, as you saw last night. And they certainly one of the better, probably the best defensive team that's left in the playoffs here.
We're chatting with Bobby Marks of ESPN. On the Western side of things, you've got Dallas trying to respond the way that Boston did in Game 2. What happens in order for that to actually take place? What does Dallas need to adjust? And maybe what has to happen on the Golden State side of things to allow for this series to be tied when it goes back to Dallas?
Well, it's basically going to be feast or famine from three, right? I mean, I think you saw when Dallas is not making threes, it's going to be tough to beat these guys. There's not much of a, really not much of an inside presence here. They basically, roll out, all perimeter guys, and they did not shoot the ball well at all. And Golden State is probably one of the better teams defending three ball here. So I think that's going to be if Dallas is in this and it gets close at the end of the game, it's because they did have the ability to, made a lot of threes. It's a little bit different than Memphis. Memphis, I thought, could beat you when Golden State played them. I thought they get a lot of points in the paint. Dallas is not that, it's not the story for the Mavericks.
So, Bobby, there's been a lot of talk about, the way to build NBA teams, and that this year has kind of been the death knell of the so-called super team, with the struggles in Brooklyn, the struggles with the Clippers and the Lakers, and then the success with kind of just good fundamental team basketball in a, in-house built team in Boston, and of course Golden State playing doing very fine for themselves without Kevin Durant. What do you think this season is going to be a bit of a watershed for the way executives around this league see team building?
Well, I think the goal is, the perfect way to build a team is certainly you have that one generational talent, but they don't come along very often. And then, basically to support them with a strong supporting cast. I think the Heat are probably the closest, from a super team that works when you have Adebayo and you've got Jimmy Butler and, Kyle not kind of where he was in Toronto, but like, it puts a lot of pressure on your scouting department to go out and find, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus, who two guys who are basically undrafted players in your starting lineup, and kind of find those end of the bench guys here. So I think there is a lot of ways. I think the easy way is, let's just get three, all NBA type guys, and we'll just figure it out the rest. And as you saw with Brooklyn, you saw with the Lakers, when one of those players gets hurt, or if that player doesn't fit, and you're relying on a bunch of, older veterans, you're going to be in a lot of trouble here. So I think teams will always still have an eye. Hey, if you can give me Kevin Durant, or Kyrie Irving or one of these other players, I think teams will always want to do it. But those are extremely hard to do. And as you saw this year, it always doesn't work.
With Bobby Marks, in terms of where the sport is going, obviously the Raptors are in a situation here where they lack, a top 10 game-breaking superstar. Now, they are hoping that Scottie Barnes continues to grow into that. And we had Jamal McGlure on the last hour. Jamal was talking about internally the plan is for Scottie to keep growing his game to the point where next year he can play and defend all five positions. And we are seeing that in the modern NBA. But is Scottie Barnes, pushing? Is there potential for him to push the envelope even more? And what Masai is trying to build here with guys like Siakam, who can do that at times, OG and Anobi, who can do that at times. Could you picture a lineup that Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster are trying to build up here that will have, three, four, five guys on the roster that can play almost any position and play maybe at a plus level?
Yeah, I think you saw a sample of that this year, basically, except for Fred. You've got, guys who are 6'7", 6'8", or above, positionless basketball, go without a center here. And I think, how Toronto played, I mean, that's probably a little bit of a blueprint. I mean, you started to see that in Dallas, as far as how they played against Phoenix and Utah with, six, eight guys. And I think with Scottie, I'm out here in Chicago for the combine, like, Scottie Barnes could be a generational talent. I'm not ready to say he could be Luka Doncic, certainly different style here, but I think he can be that franchise player that you can build around. And as long as you have the right pieces around him, you can be good for a long time.
So, Bobby, you're out there at the combine. We're looking at the draft prospects. The Raptors have a first-round pick, albeit the 30th overall pick in this draft. What kind of depth is in this draft? And I know there always are gems. What are the odds of the Raptors hitting on one in this particular round?
I think it goes 40 deep. And I think there is a big, wide gap when you probably get outside the top 10. I mean, I think from that 11 to 40 range, it's basically what do you like, right? What do you? I mean, you're almost going to go probably by need by then. Not a great guard as a draft as far as depth point guard wise, but the draft has proven, especially if you have an early second round pick, that you can find players. I mean, you look at Herb Jones in New Orleans last year, I think went 35, and he might be named one of the all defensive teams this year. And Gary Trent in Portland was a second round. Jalen Brunson, who you guys are watching here, so you can find a player early in the second round where the Raptors are that can help your bench out at a really low cost.
Well, that's got to be the plan. You keep adding to the program here. We'll see where it goes. Enjoy the combine, Bobby. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs as well. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There's Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider. That's a good sign, 40 deep. I mean, obviously, yeah. There's a disparity between who would be at the top of that draft and what you're finding once you get into the 30 range, give or take.
Yeah, but they're 33rd. I had 30. It's 33rd they got. So
yeah, they've
it's
got
not a first round pick. It's an early second round pick. But yeah, hey, that's good. That's good news. I mean, hey, you missed on Malachi Flynn, but maybe you get this one right.
Yeah, the Malachi Flynn story this year, like, this is the thing about the Vegas, rookie showcase and all. Like, it just gets blown so out of proportion.
Oh yeah.
And, everything he heard during the summer was, man, they like where his game's at. He looked good in Vegas. And then it just never got there. And by the end of he was doing some spot duty against Philly, and it was an absolute disaster.
Terrible.
Like, they had to get him out of the game. Like, it was check in for 2 minutes, jack up a couple of bricks, missed defensive assignments, see you later. Like, we can't even
no
play.
No confidence,
you.
Nothing. Just,
no, it's too bad because, like, with Fred's injury and the lack of depth, at that position, like, there was a real opportunity for Malachi Flynn to insert some sort of dominance on that backup role.
Should have been.
It just didn't happen. And Delano Banton, I think, like, that's a project still. Banton's a project. Like, mm-hmm. They were giving him some run early in the year. I'm not sure what to expect out of him, moving forward. But he's a guy that fits the mold of someone with length. Someone who's got athleticism. Someone, if he can improve defensively and improve a shot, then he's a guy that might be in the fold in the future.
Just has to learn to play basketball, right? That's the thing about Scottie Barnes that's so intriguing. He's got all the length and all the physical tools you could ask for, and he's got, like, incredible basketball IQ. Delano Banton, all the length and physical tools, the basketball IQ's got to come, and who knows if it's going to come in time.
It's a second-round flyer, Like, that's what you get in the majority of the time in the second round is you're taking projects, and Malachi Flynn was a late first-round pick. Buddy, 4 years in college – that's another thing. Sometimes you realize maybe there's a reason the guy was 4 years in college.
Yeah.
But the Raptors are going to have that pick. The Pistons pick, I guess it was, in the beginning of the second round or up, towards the top of the second round, and they'll be seeking out talent like they always do. I mean, that's
– Wow. They need guys. Like, you can't miss on these late picks. Like, you got to find guys that can at least be serviceable rotation players, right?
Yes.
Because – with the way they built this program, they don't have a ton of assets to trade right now. I'm not sure how else you get better as the Raptors right now. You're going to have your mid-level exception guys and all these, you can have your bit players, but you got to continue to grow the internal crop. And when you miss on a Flynn, you hit on a Barnes, you got to be hitting more than you miss, or it's just not going to work out.
Yep. No, that's the truth. All right, we'll come back and look ahead to the weekend in the Stanley Cup playoffs, the PGA Championship, the Jays. We got a lot cooking this weekend, a long weekend for that matter. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so we're heading into a long weekend, and show will be off on Monday. We're all going to be back on Tuesday. Noodles will have full breakdown of the Battle of Alberta. He's in Calgary tonight. He'll be in Edmonton on Sunday. That's pretty good. Pretty good lifestyle out there for Noodles, and we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
That's the place to be, man.
It seems
that really is the place to be.
Yep.
You see, Brady Tkachuk signed a deal with Budweiser.
Yes.
How about that?
I think that's smart on both fronts. I think if you're Brady Tkachuk, I'm sure you're making some change now, right? Like, why not? You're in the off season. You make a little money. And if you're Budweiser, that's the guy you want affiliated with you right now. He's the guy drinking beers at every single game.
Yeah.
Like, the camera's on him all night. What's he going to be wearing? Like, a Budweiser mask tonight? A Budweiser helmet? What's Kachuk going to be wearing to support
He needs
shield.
One of those helmets. Those helmets with the two beer cans.
Yes.
You know, they kind of go on the side, and you get the little straws coming to your mouth. Because he had that one photo. I saw that one photo of him. They caught him where he had a big tall boy in each of his back pockets. Plus, he was carrying one.
Oh yeah.
Back to his seat, right? And I'm sure they were for his neighbors, right? Like it wasn't all for him. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he's very, very. You know, philanthropic with his beers and his booze. And he signed his deal. He's made a lot of money. And, you know, I get the impression, like, if you're out in Calgary, you just love this guy. I don't think he has the same routine in Edmonton. I would think he probably makes the trip if he does luxury suite. You can't
I don't know,
be,
man.
You can't
you think
be in
so?
This, I don't know, man. You can't be doing the same stuff, like decked out in Flames gear. Because then, if I'm Ottawa, I'm saying it's not that we don't appreciate the cheering or whatever. If an Oiler fan gets into it with you, then you're dealing with a PR problem, right? It's not about Kachuk. It's about Ida wouldn't trust Oiler fans around him to be looking for him and trying to provoke him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're no longer in – it's not home turf anymore if you're the Calgary Flames super fan and you're in Edmonton.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You're right. Just for security reasons,
yes.
With the greased-up Oilers crowd in the Battle of Alberta, especially if the Oilers are losing, right? You don't want to be out there celebrating another hat trick from your brother if you're kicking the crap out of the Oilers, who are staring in the face of another playoff letdown.
Yeah, that would, I think, not be ideal. That probably needs to be vetted a little bit more if you're the Kachuk family, and maybe that's when the Ottawa Senators would come into play. But, yeah, we'll see what comes of it, right? We got game two tonight. And the Jays are in action. Joey Votto, it's his weekend. You know, this will, I think, be somewhat of a celebration of Joey Votto. He's being activated off the IL. He's up here. He's ready to go. He's in the lineup tonight. And we talked a lot about him in the 4 p.m. hour and his history and him being from the city of Toronto. And he's on an awful team. I don't know if he's going to be willing to waive. I don't know if he wants to go anywhere between now and the trade deadline. But if he stays in Cincinnati, this will be it.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're not rolling through town again for a few years. We won't see him play again live.
Yeah. I don't know why he'd waive now. I mean, he's been committed to that place. I mean, 10 years ago, I was saying, why doesn't he get out of that place? Right.
Yeah.
But hey, and who knows? But Tigers hanging in, still on the cut line, Hayes.
All right. I hope he makes it.
He's a plus four.
Then you got two stories. Like you got the leaders. Where Pereira is 6 under today through 17. He's at 8 under for the tournament. Zalatoris, you get Thomas McElroy up there, Fitzpatrick, Hatton. You got some big names. And if you can get it at the other end where Tigers teeing off in the morning and then the big boys go out in the afternoon, that is, I think, optimal viewing experiences for golf fans right now.
That'd be great.
So let's hope that he finds a way to make the cut. Great seeing you, Dave. Thank you for doing this, buddy. Have a great long weekend.
Always a lot of fun, Hayes. Have a great weekend.
There he is, Dave Festruck of the Toronto Star. I am Brian Hayes, and we are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the long weekends. We're back Tuesday at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.